Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broad Wasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and let's go to the movies. Maybe tomorrow will bring us a sign, but you're never fully dressed without a smile. I think I'm going to like it here, you dumb dog. It's going to be Easy Street. It's the hard knock life? No, I don't need anything but you and tomorrow. Well, the White House version. Joining us today are the usual little girls, including Kevin Sandy Jaeger.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take that. I'll be like one of the little girls for this episode.
I mean, to be fair, I still use the dog's name for...
Oh, you know what? I would totally get cast as Pepper, but I would be the kid who got cast as Pepper that was angry that I was too tall to be Andy. Like, that's totally my MO, by the way.
Yeah, it had to be Pepper.
Wait, your MO is being angry, or your MO is being too tall for Annie?
Beat angry that I'm too tall for fill in the blank.
Okay. Fair.
Great. Kimberly, our We Got Annie game master, an unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Best number in the show.
Best number in the show. I use the movie ones for the... Yes, best number in the show. But I use the movie ones for this one because we haven't done it in a long time. And I just had N ranking on the brain. So I whatever. Mm. Anyway.
We were just watching something and I was like, this is giving me We Got Annie vibes. I don't remember what it was.
Hmm. And with us today is someone you may have seen on Broadway in How I Learned to Drive and Arcadia, or your own personal screen in Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood, Taking Woodstock, Ms. Maisel, and a host of other things in addition to the upcoming The Girl You Talk To. Let's give a big Broadwasted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Alyssa Mangold.
Hello. Hello, welcome.
It's far.
We're very happy to have you.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to have three new friends.
Absolutely. Yes. We have to split you into thirds, though, if that's fine.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Yeah, I figured. Totally. But let's start with, what are you drinking?
Me first? Okay, so I'm doing two things. I have a lovely wine that was left over at my house from a dinner party. I don't know what it is, but it's nice.
It's red.
And a Canada Dry seltzer with a hand-picked lime picked by me from a deli.
Wait, now I'm going to say this. Like, this is hand-picked from the produce.
I hand-picked it myself. Farm to table, deli to table.
Yeah, deli to table. Like, hand-picked by my Instacart delivery driver.
Uh-huh, hand-picked not by me, but by someone.
Yeah.
Fresh squeezed by me.
Kimberly?
I'm also on the seltzer train.
So I still have a few more weeks till I'm allowed to drink again. Once I pop a child out, but it'll be fine.
Oh, interesting way to put it.
I don't know. How many different ways going to be like, I'm not drinking because I'm pregnant, but you can't see the bottom half of my body.
That was great. I've never heard it said that way before. I love it.
Kimberly is a human making factory right now. And once she is out of business, she will commence with the drinking.
My Instagram right now is all summertime cocktails.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't decide if it's mean or like inspirational.
I guess that's true. That'll get you to the home stretch.
Because I'm just like, oh, a rosé sangria does sound good.
I saw on Instagram recently, somebody posted like, do they still call them memes or those things? Like the pictures with the words on it.
Yeah. So
there was there was like a picture of like a woman who was holding, like it was her hand holding up like a cocktail. And it said, I've waited 9 months for you. And in the background is like the baby sleeping and like close to it. She wrote, oh, I guess you too.
Oh my god!
Are you on my Instagram?
I know. Oh god! The Instagram feed is interesting.
What are you drinking?
Yeah, Kevin, what are you drinking?
Oh, I am drinking a margarita, like a basically just a mixed margarita with tequila that I poured into my BroadwayCon 2016 cup.
What is it? Bill's like rodeo root beer.
Wild Bill's old fashioned soda pop company.
Ooh.
We're just gonna keep giving them plugs. They don't pay for it, but I just love this cup.
I know.
Like, we're giving them plugs.
Can they like cater? Can their truck come?
I mean, I'm sure that if you threw a party and you could hire that truck, I'm sure they do weddings like soda pop and stuff like that.
Baby showers.
If they don't, they should.
I did not realize when I elected for like the $13 drink that came with like the refillable cup, I didn't realize that 7 years later, I'd still be using it all the time.
Yeah,
that's
it's great.
The dream. That is what a collectible cup should look like.
Agreed.
It's a really cool looking cup, but it's also incredible because you pour, it's really, really big. And if you pour a lot of liquid in it, it like keeps, like the way the cup is designed or whatever it is, it keeps it cold.
Sure.
That's priceless.
So it's almost like a Yeti, but it's like a Yeti in the form of like a cool ass mug.
Keep it in the freezer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
That's what I do.
Oh.
That's so smart.
Okay. World exploded. All right.
Yeah.
But like, let's talk about your life.
Well, I'm drinking, this is also not a promotion, but I am drinking Uncle Nearest 1884 small batch whiskey. No. On the rocks.
Ooh.
It's very good. Has a nice little kick at the end.
Brian, you have a name tag on?
I voted today.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for doing your civic duty.
My pleasure. I voted today for the Philadelphia mayor.
Good.
That's right. You guys said it was primaries today, right?
Yeah. Primaries. Now they'll leave me alone for a little bit, but because... Man, when you move to a state where your vote like really does matter, it's wild. It's a crazy difference.
So like, did anybody else watch? Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I'm just be like Hulu. I know what you're gonna say. Yes, I watched Succession.
You, I mean,
yes.
What a week for thinking
what
about
what a
elections
week for. And, like, I know that episode.
We have any
really
say in anything? Oh,
I know. For those of you listening to this in the future, we're talking about episode 8 of the last season of Succession, which is the election, which is wild.
Wild.
Okay. The Hulu ads that you get out here are just like, this person's a trash person because they do these three, like just so many. Hulu's the one that I get a lot on, but like just like totally directed, but also like it's crazy, especially when the state Senate was going with like Oz versus Fetterman or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I mean, not whatever it was. I know what it was, but like, man, they would. I mean, it was wild. It was like watching a pay-per-view boxing fight via commercials. Like they were nasty. It was amazing.
I know that you mean Dr. Oz.
Yes.
When you said Oz, my first thought was, does he mean Frank Oz, like the Muppet tier? Or does he mean like the Wonderful Wizard?
Or the Wizard?
Yeah. I mean,
a real election would be fun between the Wizard of Oz, Dr. Oz, and Frank Oz.
Oh my God.
I would love to see the Hulu ads for that.
Alyssa, this is really important. Who would you vote for?
between
what are they running for, Kevin?
It doesn't matter, Kimberly. It doesn't matter.
I think Frank Oz. I think I want to see a whole Muppet government. I think.
Oh, interesting.
I agree. And if he can do voices, yeah. He can be like, hold on, let me get the vice president. And then the vice president turns out to just be him,
but it's also
doing
him.
A different voice.
Well, which is kind of like in a kind of meta way, whoever you voted for there, you're kind of voting for three people who are doing different, like, sleight of hand kind
Whoa.
Of situations.
Whoa.
So all the odds is, I mean, have you ever seen all three of them in the same room? I'm just saying.
This is fascinating. I have not.
We could have Yoda and Miss Piggy for president at the same time.
That would be That's delightful. Great. That would be the most delightful ticket to vote for. Sign me up.
I'm in.
You know what? Like, the world has been so crazy lately that, like, 2028, I don't put it past them.
No, does anyone else feel like at this point, after the last couple of years, like, I don't know what it would take for me to be truly surprised?
No.
What could
nothing.
Happen that would make me go, that doesn't make any sense? Nothing has made any sense in
Agreed.
So long. Yeah, Miss Piggy for president. I'll phone bank for her.
First gentleman, Kermit D. Frog?
Yes, please.
I was just, or it's like a Survivor style show in 2024, like where there's like eight contestants to be president, and we see like who survives the longest in the wilderness, and that's how we pick.
Honestly, that would be a great metric. I would be really interested. Yeah. I'm very into like survival mindset, and seeing who came out on top would be like really valuable information.
Who formed good allies and who stabbed them back.
I would watch a real life Hunger Games. Ethically, I wouldn't want to, but I would if it was presented to me.
Or like it's a paintball. Like they just.
Yeah, not
I
with murder.
No one to be. Yeah, exactly. I could watch it if no one was being murdered.
Agreed. Also, so
like a really good stunt and then, you know, be on the talk show.
Yeah.
Be on the reunion.
I want to see the fashion when they all do the entrances and like people are.
Well, yeah, you know, that's what we really
want. Dresses
and
flames and all
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Like I want them to die the way they do on like Flora's Lava, where they where they have to go all the way down. Like they really sell it.
Yeah.
I agreed. Yeah, agreed. So I'm into good. That. Speaking of Lava, what's your favorite musical?
Funny you should mention Lava. My favorite musical, I think, in this moment is Hadestown.
Whoa!
Which is
segue.
Apropos.
Wow, we have to stop doing this podcast. I actually did a good segue.
That
by
was
accident.
An amazing segue.
This is the last episode of Broad Wasted. Thank you so much for joining us.
I got in just under the wire.
Yeah, just under the wire.
No, I mean, I love many musicals, and it's hard to pick one. I could never say of all time forever, but it's been the front runner for many years now. It was the first musical I went to when everything reopened. I like the day Hadestown tickets went on sale. I was like, I'm buying one. I want to go be there. I think I love how they tell that story and use the theater, the convention of like theater and musical and epic and. It just makes me cry every single time, and I learn something different about myself every time. I don't know. I could talk about it forever. So, yeah, excellent segue. Love that show.
This is the podcast to talk about it forever. So we're happy to talk about Hadestown as long as you want.
It's so good.
It's right? I'm not alone in this, right? It's
no,
so
No, good. It's amazing. Of all the shows of recent years, it's the one I've seen the most. Actively went to seek it out both on Broadway and on tour because I just kind of needed to inject it into my veins.
It's something that I feel like, I mean, I got to see it. I went in knowing nothing. I saw it at New York Theater Workshop. And I remember then thinking like, this is, the music is so special. And the way that they used that space was really smart. And so I was really excited for it on Broadway. And just when I'm not like a fine art person, I'm not a really visual thinker. So I like when I go into museums, I don't really have responses to art, which is why I don't go to museums that much. When those walls opened and the lights came through when they're going down into Hadestown in Act One, I wept. I the way that every design element of that show comes together. And
it looks like such a simple set, and then it's full of surprises.
Full of surprises.
The lights, the wall, the...
I'm a huge Rachel Houck fan also. Like, she was our set designer for How I Learned to Drive, and on our first day of rehearsal, I, like, beelined to her. Like, I love your work. So she also knew what the Constitution means to me.
Sure, that's a great.
And I just saw Goodnight Oscar, and she did that set. And I feel like her sets teach me how to watch the story in a way that I don't always know how an environment is shaping what I'm seeing. And I feel like hers always do. And Hadestown is just stunning.
I feel like the set is a weird thing in a good way, because like the set can be like exactly like you're talking about. Like it frames it. You don't think about it, but it awes you at certain points. And then there's the other side of it where it's like the nice thing you can say about a show you didn't like is like, well, the set was nice, but like it was, I'm sure it was, but it has a different effect when like the substance in front of it is like, is held up by kind of those pieces. It's like a fascinating, the set is like this weird thing that people use to like for checkpoints when like doing reviews or talking about a show, and mm-hmm. it can mean a whole slew of things.
Yeah, I heard a director once say something kind of along those lines where he was like, the meanest thing, the way you, like, I know someone hated my work was if they say the blocking was really, really good. It's like, oh, if you saw the blocking, then this play was over.
Right. Oof.
But it's like, you know, theater is alchemy, and you need every element. Like, you know, sometimes all the elements don't gel together, but a couple of people really crushed it and their work shines through. And I'm trying to remember the last time I like had a bad night at the theater. I'm just so happy to see.
Yeah.
You know, like usually someone did something extraordinary 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm. And it might be the usher, but someone did something extraordinary.
It might be the usher. Man, ushers are having a tough time right now. People are, you know, they're kind of on the front lines of people learning how to be in space again.
Well, so going back to your favorite musical question,
yes.
Growing up, where did you grow up? And was it movie musicals for you? Did you get to go to Broadway? Like, what was the show that kind of got you into it, and how did you absorb that?
So I grew up in Manhattan, like two subway stops away from Broadway. And
cool.
My parents aren't in the theater, but they love it. And so they took me to shows starting when I was really young. I think I saw Cats when I was 4. And that was my first Broadway show.
Mm-hmm. When did you see Dogs?
What?
I said, when did you see Dogs?
When I saw Annie a couple of weeks after Cats. And that was really like, I think Cats was just magical to me. But Annie was when I kind of... And Annie I saw first as the movie musical, because it wasn't on Broadway until I was 7, which mm-hmm. was, you know, ages when you're 4 and you're in love with musicals.
Yes.
But I saw the movie musical of Annie, and that was when I kind of clicked into, oh, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't fully understand the mechanics of like how one becomes an actor, but I know that I want to do whatever is happening on that screen. And then when Annie was on Broadway, and I got to go see like real life girls my age doing a Broadway show, that's when I started to put together with my like New Yorker child brain, like, oh, well, they figured out how to get to do Annie every single night. So surely there's a way, if I live in the same city, that I could figure this out. And so I like found Backstage Magazine and started kind of working on my parents and being like, I want to do this. And they are smart and reasonable people and said no for as long as humanly possible. But because I was in New York and it was so accessible, they, you know, they had an open call for the TV movie of Annie that they made in 1999. And it was like a subway ride. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, they took me and I got really close to getting it. And then it all kind of like spiraled from there, where once I knew that it was so possible, even though, you know, it's not, it's hard.
Sure.
And I've actually, I sometimes forget I was never actually in Annie because I auditioned for it so many times. but also just,
you could have done
what
you pictured each production that you went in for. Like,
oh yeah. Which were all versions of the same one. Cause it was all like that 1999 revival torn mm-hmm. for many years. But my parents also like played Rent in the car, and I, you know, I loved Aida, and I saw that a bunch of times as a kid. I loved Starlight Express. I was very into going to the theater and having the experience of like being with all of these people and a story being told to us. And I think that's part of what got me into it was understanding that the people on stage were giving me something that was so powerful and mm-hmm. wanting to be one of the people who gave that to other people. And
sure.
I mean, 4-year-old me probably couldn't have explained it that way. And maybe that's not how it started, but that's certainly how it has continued to evolve. And I think part of the reason I've kept doing it for as long as I have is because that has just gotten stronger and stronger. And the more I understand, you know, why musicals work on us so well and why having, you know, a feeling that's too big to speak, you have to sing it. A whole show that, like a show like Rent, that is all too big to speak. It all mm-hmm. has to be sung. And like, you can feel that when you're just listening to it in the car. Like Hamilton is another one where I was introduced to that from the soundtrack. And it's just like, sure. this music is giving me something so much bigger than just my everyday life. It's a really special medium. And then I kind of got into straight plays with Arcadia, I think was the first.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't book Annie, but you booked a Tom Stoppard play, so.
Yes. Weirdly, like, don't maybe have the voice to sing in a Broadway show, but have the brain to do a Tom Stoppard play, which is, I think, a trait I just didn't get to make a choice in, but is what happened. Yeah, and so that, I think I just kind of got pulled into straight plays more because that's where I was more skilled. But I remember also before I booked Arcadia, I saw August Osage County when the cast had just changed and Johanna Day had come in and taken over. And I remember that was the first play I saw where I was like, oh, this is why you do plays. Mm. This play has the stakes of a musical.
Yes.
And I remember watching her also and being like, oh, that's what acting is. That's what a performance that just tears the roof off of a theater without being allowed to sing, just having to use human words.
Sure.
And
Joanna Day, friend of the show, right?
Yeah.
Friend of the show. I mean, friend to
all.
Many of us. Yeah. I think she's just one of the most talented people on the face of the planet. And so anyway, by the time I got the script for Arcadia, I kind of understood why one would do a play.
Because
I had seen August Osage County and Arcadia is also like a long play. It is similarly epic in how it's building all of these ideas. Also talking about lava, you know, at the end of a play that is about fire and
to be fair, yes.
Thermodynamics and then, you know, Thomasina dies in that fire and,
spoiler alert.
Oh, spoiler alert, in case you don't know 20 years later.
Yeah.
So you were inspired by Joanna Day, and then you got to work with her in How I Learned to Drive.
Yeah.
Before we get into How I Learned to Drive, you grew up in Manhattan. Do you know how to drive?
I do know how to drive.
Okay, cool.
It's like when a Manhattanite puts a driver's license in the special skill section of their resume, like they mean it. It really is a special skill. It's totally. Like not that usual. Yeah, my parents, again, very smart, reasonable people, were like, you should know how to drive a car. and they were right. It has been very useful many times in my life. I don't do it often, but I feel very grateful to know how to do it.
Anyway, back to the play.
But so all that to say, I auditioned for Arcadia and I, you know, knew that that was something that I really wanted to do because it was such a big epic play. And then I was an understudy and I got to go on and make my Broadway debut kind of at the last second one day. And that was a night where I felt that feeling of, as I was walking onto the stage before the show started, like this voice came into my head that was like, this night isn't about you. This is about the people, the 1100 people who are there, who have come looking for the thing that you get when you're in an audience. And your job for the next 3 hours is to give them that. And that's what I did. And I had the best time. And and then I got to do How I Learned to Drive with Johanna Day. And that was.
And Mary Louise.
And Loki, Mary Louise Parker and David Morris. No big deal.
Two of the people who are revisiting the show, almost 20 years later?
25 years later. It was supposed to only be 23, and then there was a small global pandemic.
Little hiccup.
What was that like being the person surrounded by the veterans like of that show?
It was incredibly special because they came into it with both their past experience. Like we kind of had two rehearsal processes, and in the first one, Chris Myers, who played the male Greek chorus, who was the other kind of new person to the process. We were both brand new to the play, and the three of them and our director were coming in with, you know, 23 years of sitting with the play. But then in 2022, Two, when we all came back together, Chris and I had been sitting with the play for 2 years. And so now we were all coming back to something at different times. And it's a play that I think is kind of sadly evergreen. You know, we're still all trying to navigate how we have these conversations about relationships and crime and love and all of the messy gray area stuff that happens in that play. And so they were all revisiting it with in a different world. Chris and I got to come in and be members of that world, but then also have sat with it ourselves as the world changed again many times over. And so it was the perfect play to, because it's a kind of living, breathing document in many ways, because it's a play that's always going to be commenting on both the kind of sexual politics landscape of the time, but also how people are confronting and dealing with trauma at any given time. It was incredible to get to come in and be both a new face and then also someone who'd been sitting with it. And they all approached it kind of as themselves at the ages that they were now as well, which changed it for them. So we were all discovering and rediscovering at the same time.
Sure.
And you got to kind of run, I mean, I saw it, you were fantastic.
Well, thank you.
But like you got in the play, you kind of get to run the gamut of playing a very young character through like a very intense experience.
Yeah.
But you're also getting to play the grandmother and like all these older. So like, what was it like, what was your process as an actor kind of like taking on not just multiple roles, but like multiple roles from like the full gamut of like ages and experiences and things like that?
It was, you know, the great thing about this, that play and that track is that it feels like, it looks like three different characters, but it is one track, and it's not accidental that it's the youngest woman in the play plays the oldest woman and the youngest. And is there are things that are being set up with the grandma and what she is imparting onto her daughter and her granddaughter that I then kind of just had to pick up the mantle from myself almost as the, as little bit. And a lot of that is because Paula wrote a perfect play. So it's pretty, you know, there's not a lot of sitting there going, well, this doesn't make any sense. How am I going to make this work? How am I going to connect the dots? A lot of it was about, for me, coming into it just with really strong physicality to make sure that I was bringing, because also that scene with the, where I'm the grandma, I'm with my daughter and my granddaughter who are both being played by women who are older than me, and having to bring the energy though of that was my domain. They're in my kitchen. And so I tried to just work really physically in terms of like, if I have all the status and all the power as the grandma and no status and no power as the 11-year-old, and I have, I'm totally beaten down as the grandma who has these rules and that's what I'm parroting. And then all of the optimism and hope of being an 11-year-old who thinks she's free in this moment. And a lot of it was also that I think I tried to play with antithesis as much as possible in that way of like, the more excited I came into that last scene, the sadder it was going to be.
Yeah.
And the more I felt, the more trust I had in Uncle Peck, the worse that was going to be. And it was also a cool like theatrical sleight of hand where I never saw what was happening on the left side of the stage during that last scene. I was like, my scene partner was a light in front of me and David Morse's voice. And it was cool to kind of just get to try to conduct the energy of that triangle, knowing the audience again was having this really specific experience. Yeah, I always just keep coming back to like, what do I need to do to make sure the audience is understanding what we're doing, that they're getting what they need to feel the moving dynamic of the story. And usually I try to work as like physically as possible, because I think like when the words are perfect, as they are in How I Learned to Drive and in Arcadia, it's, you know, it's about how do you just embody them then, and how do you make sure it feels as real as possible?
Yeah. And
well,
make sure everyone understands. I feel like it's such a good way to put it for like everyone. Like,
yeah,
it's just, it's your job to interpret and present, like,
and communicate.
Yeah.
Well, there's also a place that we like to go where the audience doesn't know what's happening.
Oh, no.
So that is Tuesdays in the corner with Kevin.
Kevin's Corner.
Welcome to Kevin's Corner, where I get to do whatever I want to because it's awesome and it's my corner and it's super fun. And since we're talking about how I learned to drive, I thought I would bring up some stories about how I learned to drive that are nowhere near as intense as Miss Vogel's.
I can't wait.
I will bring up a few stories and we'll see where those lead to questions. So the first thing I found very funny when I moved to New York, because I grew up and learned to drive in Florida, was that there's this thing called parallel parking. I didn't learn to parallel park in Florida. I didn't really know that was a thing.
Not on the test?
No, it wasn't on the test.
I didn't have to parallel park on my test either. Let me tell you, I would not have a driver's license if I had to parallel park.
I also would not have a driver's license. I don't understand the mechanics of it or any issue of it. I don't get anything about parallel parking.
Wait, but you took your test in New York, right?
I actually took my test in Connecticut, which is also part of why I have a license. And then I waited 6 months and again got a New York license. Don't tell me.
That's hilarious.
Amazing.
Also still hilarious that they didn't make me parallel park.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Parallel park in New Jersey.
Yeah, New Jersey has one. Yeah. I had to learn it.
Yeah, so I didn't learn how to parallel park at all. I think parallel parking is a ridiculous concept. So my question for you is, what parallels does your solo show have with the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Oh my God. It is directly parallel related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because my solo show, The Girl You Talk To, is my pitch for the possibility that Jesus was in fact a woman. And the Jesus story is what gave us Joseph Campbell hero journey structure, which is the structure of every superhero movie. All superhero movies are the Bible. They are all the Jesus story. And so part of what my solo show is about is how important stories are and how seriously we need to take which ones we are telling, because the trickle-down effect is so enormous. So the parallel between my solo show and the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that I think if Jesus had been recorded as a woman, our superhero movies would be different.
That worked out. Kevin's Corner questions.
Well done. So wow. I can't parallel park, but I can crush it in Kevin's Corner.
We're really messing up this episode because everything makes sense.
Okay.
I'm a communicator. That's what I'm here to do. It's just to make sense.
I love it. I'm actually really proud of you. Okay. So I learned to drive in a minivan, like a soccer mom, like Toyota Sienna, forest green mom van, because my parents didn't trust me because I was a bad driver, because I like to close my eyes and sing along with whatever Broadway album I was listening to while driving. And I definitely took out like four or five of my neighbor's mailboxes because I would just be singing and with my eyes closed and just slam into their mailbox. Legit was a thing.
My God.
So my question is, what is a crazy theater experience in your life that you look back at and like wish you could have just closed your eyes and not seen it happening? Like a crazy snafu, like something bad that happened on stage.
I'm trying to think. Hold on, something's gonna come to me.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry,
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh, well, when I was in our dear dead drug lord, there was a crazy ending that happened that we never quite knew how people were going to respond to it. Mm. And we found that out very quickly on our second preview when, in the middle of this crazy thing that happens, a man got up and started screaming at us and then walked into the lobby still screaming and was like, I heard later that he was like throwing stuff around in the lobby. I don't know. I was on stage though, and we hadn't yet had a conversation, which we did immediately after that show, about like mm-hmm. how we will pause the show next time something happens, and here's how we're all going to get off stage. Here's, you know, kind of what our protocol is, but this is our second preview. So we didn't know. And, I can't say I want to go back in time and close my eyes and wish I wasn't seeing it, because that's all I did in that moment.
Right.
As this was happening, was I was lying on stage. I was covered in blood and I just closed my eyes and like held my breath until it was clear we could go on. And that's probably still to this day, and I hope remains forever, the craziest thing that has ever happened to me in a theater.
Kevin, did we see that show together?
We did at the W?
Yeah, the WP.
Yeah. Yes.
Now I'm trying to imagine what someone would yell. Oh.
It was a bad word.
I'm sure.
Over and over, very loudly.
Did that happen a lot?
That was the only time it was that crazy. We did have to pause the show, I think, one or two other times. I think someone had a seizure, I think, from like the lights during that section. And we, you know, we would hear stuff in the audience, but generally, I think they did a really good job with the messaging of like the marketing, that people started understanding, like, when I'm coming to this, I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I understand this is not maybe casual fare. Yeah. And so I think they did a really nice job preparing people without giving anything away. So it was really just that like first week that things were a little crazy, but people were not shy about talking to me when I was leaving the theater about like their experience. That's I never quite had that before, where like people felt very much like they were my friend and would say good or bad. Like sometimes I would walk out and little girls would just hug me, and sometimes other people would be like, would, you know, give their unfiltered opinion about it.
Oof.
Which that's fine. I mean, I think again, like we're all having an experience together, and when I've slept enough and like I'm hydrated enough and I'm awake and you know, psyched when I'm leaving, I'm always happy to talk to people about their genuine experience of what, like their non-critical thinking feeling. They're just like gut reaction to what they just saw. That's generally really fun for me. So that was probably the craziest.
Great. And then the third question, you're doing really well. You're almost out of the woods, the metaphorical woods. The third question is, so today I was doing some research on like crazy driving questions and like people taking their driving test, because I was trying to find like a fun little quiz, but like sad day, there aren't really very many fun quizzes out there.
That's terrible.
I know. I mean, there are quizzes that are kind of, they start to be fun and then they're not fun. It was not a fun experience. what I did learn was I was reading about like the most common things that people get wrong on like their writing driver's tests.
Ooh.
And one of the things that people struggle with the most is understanding what the lines mean on the road, depending on what like the colors and the like the type of line. Like people like struggle that like a white dashed line means that like you're both lanes are going the same direction, so you can cross between. But a yellow dashed line means that like the people on the other side are going the opposite direction, but you can still pass.
Right.
And then sometimes there's a dashed line, but a dot like a solid line. So it means like if you're on the dashed line side, you can pass, but the solid line people can't pass. So there's all these like rules that people like mess up on, and like gives people super anxiety because they like just struggle with boundaries.
And that's so been driving with Kevin.
I'm panicking just listening to you describe this. I'm going, do I know this?
Right. Yeah. It's
do I remember this?
I was like, and that was actually one of the reasons that I didn't want to do the quiz, because the one cool quiz I found, I was like, I don't know most of these answers, yeah, and I don't want to sound stupid too, because it's my corner and I'm supposed to sound smart. So my question is, since people have struggling with boundaries and like what the boundary lines mean, what are some boundaries that you think are being placed on young actors today that you would encourage them to ignore in order to find more success and fulfillment?
I think the most immediate one is anybody who tells you to pick one thing and stay in your lane, don't listen to them. I think it's so antithetical to storytelling to like decide, oh, I should only do one of the things. I should only be an actor or a writer or a director. Like I can't think of anything more wonderful than when you're being driven by, I want to tell this story. So I guess if I'm the best person to write it and direct it, then I'll write it and direct it. If I'm not, if I should just direct it and produce it, great. If I should just act in it, great. But I think I would tell anyone who's like being pushed into having, you know, role job boundaries, don't go follow your heart, follow the stories that are exciting to you. And similarly, any boundary around type, look, brand, don't even, it is again, like that's not what we're making art for. Our job as artists is to break all of those boundaries and all of those barriers and show every different kind of human and tell every different kind of human story. And right now we're still telling like this tiny percentage of the human experience in our stories. And we're showing this tiny percentage of what humans look like on our stages and on our screens. And so don't listen to anyone who's trying to give you any kind of type or look or telling you to make yourself a certain way. Just in your art and outside of it, like I know it's so cliche to be yourself, but I would say maybe just like become yourself. Keep excavating, like what does that mean to you? Spend all the time you would spend on headshots for this different look on just like who are you. And the last one is there are no rules when it comes to reach out to people. I love finding the people. I don't care. And like you would be amazed, the people who I have written to as an actor submitting a headshot who will not write back to me compared to the people who make things who I have written to as an interested fellow artist, where I'm like, you made this thing that I love. I want to make similar things. Would you have coffee with me? The people who I've had coffee with and started mentor, mentee, friend relationships with is incredible to me. People want to talk about their art. People want to help the next generation keep the candle lit and bring, you know, bring that light forward. And when people reach out to me, I'm never like, no, I don't want to help you learn how to start a company and produce a play. I'm like, yes, another person who has a story they want to tell. Yes, come. So follow your heart and follow the stories that you want to tell. And don't anyone who's trying to give you boundaries within that, like I would be very skeptical.
You know what? Cross those lines no matter what color they are, kids.
Yes, fail the quiz.
Unless you're driving.
Unless you're driving, then please
follow the driving rules.
Follow the driving rules and always be polite. Always lead with manners. Don't violate people's personal boundaries. You know, the huge.
And yeah. Alyssa, you made it without any citations. Congratulations. You made it to Kevin's corner.
Oh my goodness.
So, Kevin had already mentioned your solo show, and I'd love to talk a little bit more about that, The Girl You Talk To. That's going to be at the West End Theater from June 21st through July 9th, so check it out. I will post the link to get tickets in the description of this episode, so you can check that out. You can also follow Alyssa on Instagram. I'll put that in the caption of this description of this as well. Yeah, tell us a little bit about where this show came from. I know you started to talk about it a little bit. Like, I'd love to hear a little bit more of kind of the concept and what you hope people will get from this, the way that you talk about the experience that an audience has.
Yeah. So, at its core, like I said, it is a story about the importance and power of stories. And my company, Pocket Universe, is dedicated to reconsidering and reimagining classic stories and conventions. And we did a bunch of Shakespeare, and I knew the next thing, we had to go back further. We had to go back to the first not the first story, but one of the much earlier stories. And, yeah. The girl you talk to is me using my experience of being told last year that I was running out of time to have children and my 17 years of Roman Catholicism and a lot of late night Googling to try to show side by side using my story up against Jesus's story. I want to create some reasonable doubt that this was supposed to be the story of a man. And also, like, caveat to all of this, when I say Jesus was a woman, this isn't like an oversimplification for marketing purposes. I'm not trying to push any version of womanhood. I just think that Jesus's body and experience of it were a lot closer to mine, because when we look at these two kinds of bodies on earth, there is one that gets to 30 and is told, you have a divine power, but only 4 more years to use it before it's a geriatric pregnancy. And it comes with, I mean, the Jesus timeline is so different than all of the other stories that we have in these religious texts. And the New Testament, we know, was supposed to be a reset from the Old Testament. We knew someone else was coming to lead. And I just, it feels so clear to me that it couldn't have been a man. And more importantly, I think the world would be really different as a result if women had been given any kind of divine providence on planet Earth. And I think I'm really skeptical, but that's not what was supposed to happen. But also, I don't think we think about stories as, I don't think we ever really stop and look at the direct correlation between the stories that we're reading and seeing and hearing and how it directly impacts our behavior and the world that we're walking through. And like we were talking about, like the Hulu ads for campaigns, like those are stories. The way that a campaign ad functions is the same as the way Hadestown functions. Sure. It's all, and so it really matters who tells the stories. And so this is like I'm not like other girls of solo shows. Because I actually like really need something from the audience. I really need people. I'm basically doing like a 3-week sample of whether I convince people or not. So, So when you come in, like you're not coming in as like a passive listener. This isn't for me to just vent about, you know, my life in the Bible. It's, I want to see if this makes sense to people, because I do take storytelling really seriously and I don't want to go on like a bender trying to change the world because this story was written down wrong if people don't, you know, think there's something to it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be this 3-week run in a theater inside of a church, which I think is perfect. And hopefully at that intersection of religion and theater, people will get to see my story up against this story that we think we know very well and see if maybe they unlock each other and if we want to make any changes going forward.
Love that.
That's really cool. That's very cool. Do people vote? Like, are you just, do you have like,
how it plays out, but like, sure. But you should come prepared to listen and make a decision for sure.
Cool.
That's also the most like how you've been describing your thoughts on acting and performance. Just seems like it lends itself to do this. Cause you're like, you want to make people understand and you want people to like side with you. And so now you've created this thing where you're just like, do you get it?
Yes. Well, because on like a very on a personal level, you know, the experience of getting the information that I got last summer about my body was I was blindsided, and we don't really have a metric for or a mechanism for talking about it. And so the impulse behind this show wasn't like, I need to do a solo show now. It was like, oh, I am now sitting on a huge amount of information that I should not be the only person who has. I want to make sure that anyone who is making decisions about their body, in kind of in any direction, has the information that I now have about what's available, what people are incentivized to try to get you to do, how to ask yourself questions about what you want to do. You know, it's a very, and what I found was that it's actually like, and this is why it needed to be a play in a theater, is that it's not a TED talk. I can't just sit down and like tell people, here's how to make these decisions. It's like, it's a pretty spiritual endeavor of what do I want to do with my body? And not just about having children, like it kind of opened this bigger question of like, in general, what do we want to do with these vessels that we have? And how do we go about asking ourselves those questions, especially when half the population has no divine anything to look at of like our bodies matter and we do have agency or we should have agency. So it very much came from a place of, I want to communicate with people about this, which is why the audience has a role to play in it as well. That it's like a group effort of, yeah. Does this make sense? Am I making sense? Am I clear?
Yeah. Cool.
I love that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All the information for that is in the description here. Again, June 21st through July 9th, The Girl You Talk To, the West End Theater in New York. But should we play a game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I have a game called The Confessional.
I just got chilled. Avoided that for...
I know, right?
It will be the silliest, best confessional you've ever been on because it is basically just theater kid truth. No dare. I have just a pile of shows in my Lights of Broadway show cards. When it's your turn, I'll sort of flip through and pick one. Whatever comes up, tell us like a confession or a truth about that show, even if it's something like, I have never seen it and I keep telling people I have. Like,
great.
That confession was like, oh, I pretend to know what people are talking about when they talk about that show.
Sure.
just something silly that comes to mind when you think of that show.
Excellent.
Kevin, do you want to confess first?
Yes, please. I need to get it off my chest.
All right. Here, kind of like say when, and then I'll pick a card for you.
When?
Hamilton.
Oh, okay. A confession about Hamilton.
I will not give you any Hail Marys to say at the end of this, just so everyone knows.
What's a good confession about Hamilton? Oh, this is just a fun story that I don't know if I ever shared, but when friends of the show, Aaron J. Albano and Nikisha Williams were in Hamilton on tour, I flew home to Florida to see the Hamilton tour with my parents when it was in town, and they went. And then afterward, Nikisha and Aaron, like, we met them at a bar across the street from the theater, like at a hotel, to have some drinks. And there were people from the show, like audience members, also in the same bar. And so when Nikisha and Aaron walked over, all of these people realized they were from the show. And so, like, they end up having to, like, do meet and greet in this lobby bar with, like, 15 random Jacksonville, Florida people who were just, like, and they were all just, like, I love that show. I watched it on Disney Plus, but, like, this was so good in person. Like, all of them were saying the same thing over and over again. And so it was really funny to watch, like, the two of them were, like, can you just meet us for a quick drink? And it turned into an entire meet and greet session. And I didn't feel bad about it because they were actually really cute. So that's my confession.
Nice.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
Love an impromptu meet and greet.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially in a bar.
Amen.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, and I think they knew that they were in the show because Nikisha still had some of her stage makeup on. So it was just like, you know, when a girl walks in and they just have like, when a girl walks in, her hair is like slicked back and she has like all of the makeup on, you're like, oh, you were in a play.
Yeah, totally.
Unless you're me in a play and you're playing an 11-year-old and you have no makeup on and no one recognizes you ever. You look like you just rolled out of bed and I'm glad you just rolled off of Broadway, but sure. Yeah, same
thing. All right, Brian, you want to pick a card?
Yeah, sure. When?
How to succeed in business without really trying.
I've never seen a stage production of it.
Ooh.
I've only seen the movie. I've never seen it on stage. I didn't see Daniel Radcliffe. I didn't see Matthew Broderick. I didn't see Jonas Brother. Although, here's a fun thing. I was the manager and a lead waiter at a restaurant in Chelsea for like a long time. And Nick Jonas was one of my regulars. And we would stay open after we closed so that he can come in with his bodyguard and just like have a meal by himself after like a long day of like doing the show. So I didn't become friendly with him, but like I was the one who closed up and waited on him. And he's truly the nicest person. He was so kind. His bodyguard was super nice too. I think he was renting a place in Chelsea at the time, going back and forth from the theater, but he would walk to and from the theater. He was just so nice. He always thanked me profusely because he had to keep his blood sugar up. He's diabetic. Yeah. So he would test, yeah. Like we like set everything up for him. He would have the meatloaf that we made, like the fancy meatloaf. Yeah. Yeah. Just like a fancy. Yeah. He had a regular order. It was our, not your mother's meatloaf. It was basically a giant meatloaf, meatball, with barbecues, with a house made barbecue sauce over the top, with yes. mac and cheese and truffle oil over the top.
Jonas knows how to order.
Yeah, 100%.
I love that. Okay.
Well done.
Yeah, but he was, what a delightful guy. Like, truly, I had no issues keeping the restaurant open for him because, like, I wasn't going anywhere and I was just going to go home. And he was just so, so grateful. And so, like, yeah, sure, of course, I'll be a part of your day. That's fine.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love that too. Ardalis, are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Okay, tell me when.
When?
I hope your confession is like I murdered someone in that show.
My confession is that I have baked a person into a pie. My confession about Sweeney Todd is that I have seen the revival twice already.
Already? Wow.
And I cried both times. That's
nerd.
Score. I know. Nothing. That is one of the best scores.
I think
it's so good and like visceral and the premise of the musical is so, so insane. Big fan.
This cast is incredible too.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you have a cast this stacked, it can feel like it's like a bunch of standout performances in the same show.
No.
But this show, it's so well integrated that everyone is just, they're doing their job. They're playing their part, like just the way they should.
Yeah.
And they're making magic happen in, like for the show, not for themselves.
Absolutely. They're all in the same production of Sweeney Todd, which I think is really hard. And it's also a big principal cast.
Yeah.
I think like getting all of them kind of in the same place is probably hard in every production.
And isn't it? Like, it's all such wildly different people that Sweeney Todd can lend itself to being like, they're in a different show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's so nice to see a like full ensemble Sweeney Todd. Like, we've had a couple in the past few years that have been gorgeous, but have been like the stripped bare. So it's just really great to hear an ensemble of like over 10 people, like really like hitting all those harmonies. Like, it's really like, it's giving you the chills it was meant to when it was written.
I think that's what's so cool about that score too, though, is like I saw the one in the pie shop and I've watched the YouTube videos of like the actor musician one, and it works, you know, like I love like they're both, that's what's also so exciting about theater, is that you can have so many different versions of something that are all so good for different reasons.
Amen.
I know. I loved the pie shop, but the idea of like a big production of it, I'm just like, I don't know.
But so good.
No, you should go see it. It's wonderful.
Limited time. Where I can sit in the theater. Okay. I'll confess something.
Yes, please.
Someone tell when?
Me when. Do it quick before you have a baby.
The prom.
Okay.
I loved this show so much. That is my confession, is that I laughed so hard. I told everyone they had to come see it with me. My friend worked the merch counter and I literally like met up with her one day and to buy a We're All Lesbians shirt to give to my husband for his birthday for Christmas.
I love it.
Because we were both so obsessed with it. And one of my, I sent Jay a TikTok the other day. That was just someone unboxing their Drama Desk award. But for the sole purpose of me watching him watch this TikTok so that I can make the joke, you know what it looks like. Because if it's our favorite joke from any musical ever, maybe, of when Brooks's character, whose character? Oh, Beth Lovell's character showing her Tony's to try and get a better room. And then Brooke Szczepanski just throws down a drama desk. And she goes, what is that? He goes, it's a drama desk. You know what it looks like.
Oh, I love that so much. That part is so good.
Sometimes it's a drama desk. We just go, I know what it looks like.
You know, I don't know what it looks like because I never saw The Prom. But I feel like I did because two of my friends saw it. And then I met up with them afterwards and they reenacted all of their favorite parts for me on 50th and Broadway, like in front of the 50th Street One station. And that part wasn't in their reenactment, which I'm now going to send them some notes about.
Right. That's a problem.
It's a problem. That's clearly one of the best jokes. But I feel like I've seen it otherwise because I got a 2-person rendition of it.
I mean, it was just like one of those joyous nights at the theater that I was just like, and then we had family come to town and we were like, we're taking you to The Prom. Like, we loved it.
That's the Unruly Heart song is still one of like the like a very small number of songs that like anytime I hear it, I just like start like it like makes me cry. Like it's just like it just is like such an honest, open, like there's not fancy lyrics, but it's just like very like bare and open, and it's just like so beautiful.
Just a good night, a joyous evening at the theater, which you need.
You need it. You need it. Oh my God, I love that.
Oh my goodness. That has been our confessional.
Yes.
Yes, that was fun.
That was good. That was a good game.
Well, that brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, check out The Girl You Talk To June 21st through July 9th at the West End Theater. Again, check out the description of this podcast episode. The link for tickets will be in there. Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. This was so much fun. And come see The Girl You Talk To because I need your help. I need people to listen and tell me if this makes sense or not. So,
yes.
It's like a game in and of itself.
Fantastic. You know, if we end every episode with a quote.
We do?
We do. And today's quote is... suddenly I hear music and the sound of your name, Rosemary, from a show I've never seen on Broadway or live. How to Succeed.
Brian Plosky, did you not have a quote prepared, even though we do actually end every single episode with a quote?
No.
I saw it was only because your eyes darted one, like fully to the right, and I was like, "Oh, he does not have one planned."
There is a big blank space in quote to wrap it up in my rundown of the episode. So that was I tied it together.
But isn't it crazy in those moments of panic where you just need one quote from any Broadway show in the world,
and
your brain suddenly can't remember anything but like toothpaste.
Yeah, you're
like,
Chipotle.
That's not a musical.
Oh, Chipotle the musical will be a musical in the next 5 years. I have no doubt someone has that IP and is working on it.
It'll be immersive at a Chipotle.
Especially the way Chipotle is like taking over Midtown. Has anyone noticed that? It's like anytime a store closes, I'm like, oh my God, that store's closing. And like all of a sudden within 5 minutes, they're like, opening soon at Chipotle.
I'm not mad about it.
Honestly, not mad. Not mad. I'd rather like, I will be okay with Midtown is literally just like a smattering of Broadway theaters surrounded by Starbucks and Chipotle.
Yeah. Tacos and theater. What else do we need?
Yeah. We're good. That sounds great to me.
Yeah.
But you can follow us wherever you find following things. No, you can follow us wherever you get social media. Okay. At Broadwasted. Of course, our Patreon is still up and running, and we've got some awesome stuff there. Facebook group, Twitter, Instagram. Check us out on all those at Broadwasted. And then, of course, find us wherever you get podcasts, things like Spotify, things like Stitcher. Of course, Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us there. Five stars, please.
And thank you.
Again, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. This was such a blast, and we hope you had a good time, too.
I had the best time. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. And as we end every episode, we raise a glass, and we say, Zutua!
Bum.
Cheers!
Cheers!
And remember when I forced you all to do that in our first episode, and here we are?
And, yet, and it became a thing.
400 episodes in. Ha 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 ha!
Has it really been 400 episodes?
Something like that.
I don't know.
That's incredible.
Crazy. It's weird.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.